Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game. A special pregame edition of Preds Insiders. Joined by Nick Keezer this week. Jake of All Trades Lyman producing for us today. The Predators are back in action tonight against the Seattle Kraken as they conclude their road trip. Puck drop at 9, pregame starting at 8 right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. So get your energy drink, get your espresso, whatever you use to get that caffeine injection, get it in you now because you're going to be up late with the Predators. Keezer, how are we doing today?
Doing well and glad to have Jake alongside for us during this show. And looking forward to seeing how the Preds close out their road trip, Adam.
Keezer is under the weather today, but he's a trooper. He's a professional. He's going to power through and bring you all of the insight that you crave about the Nashville Predators. So since the last time we were on the air, and by the way, thank you, Nick, as well as Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean for filling in for me last week. But since we last recorded Preds Insiders, the Predators have played 3 games. They lost 3-2 in overtime to the Edmonton Oilers. They lost 2-0 to the Calgary Flames and defeated the Vancouver Canucks 5-3. So far on this 5-game road trip, that's 1 win, 1 regulation loss, and 2 overtime losses. If you stretch this span back to the back-to-back road games against Washington and Florida, so 7 of 8 on the road, the Predators are 2-3-2. And Nick, normally a mid-November Wednesday night late puck drop on the road against the Seattle Kraken would hardly register in over the course of an 82-game season. But for what would normally be a ho-hum sort of game in the grand scheme of the schedule, this game does feel critical for the Predators. If they win this game, they come back from the road trip 2-1-2. That would be points in 4 of the 5 games. Perhaps the Predators can start feeling good about where their game is. They can hopefully use it as a launching pad to get back on track after a rough start of the season. But if they lose this game, let's say they lose it in regulation, and they come back from the road trip 1-2-2, we are having a much different conversation about the state of this Predators team. So when you consider everything we've seen on this road trip, how important is this game against Seattle to you?
I think it's huge because this is a Predators team that has tried to execute a lot better on the 5-on-5. And when you take a look at how they've done 5-on-5, it's still lackluster play from what we would expect just watching this group, Adam. And I think more importantly, too, I think tonight, if they get some power play opportunities, it's going to be huge that they get goals on this end of things. And so, you know, as they do close out their trip tonight, you know, it's a weird Wednesday night schedule for them. But I think, you know, knowing that Seattle does not get called for a lot of penalties, they're a very disciplined team. I mean, it's, you know, it's early, but I think for the most part, if the Predators can draw some penalties tonight, that would be a big deal for them against a Kraken team that I believe has been, I think they've been shorthanded about a dozen times in the last 5 games. And so we'll see what they end up doing. If they can, you know, make 5-on-5 plays better, I think that would be the first place to start. But then on special teams, can they execute to the volume that they need to be? And, you know, I think for a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, who I know that we'll talk about later in my story that I wrote just in my story that I wrote at thegamenashville.com, I analyzed how they scored a couple of their goals. And, you know, Jonathan Marchessault really helped set up that power play. And I thought that could be something to pay closer attention to, because if he can do that during five on five play, which he certainly can, and it's very, very strange that they've not been able to execute like this on five on five. But if he can, you know, use that time and space to find his teammates, and I get you have one less player on the ice during this power play, but for Jonathan's sake, you know, we do need to see more out of him. You know, Steven Stamkos has popped off a little, I would say a little bit more lately, but I think for Marchessault, just him singling in on him, I think things will start to click a lot better if he can use that time and space more often. And since they've broken up the lines again, I mean, this will be another game where we perhaps see Marchessault, Stamkos on two different lines, which would be interesting to see. I know that, I mean, for them on offense, it's going to be about how can they continue to find that, you know, good chemistry. It's about how can they find each other in those pockets where they can create some good chances. And so, Adam, I think for them to close out this trip on a high note would be awesome to see. And I think for them, more importantly too, if they get a win, they come home, they play Winnipeg, who is probably the NHL's best team undoubtedly right now.
Not probably, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. If they can come home after, you know, a win in Seattle, and I hear they're flying back right after the game in Seattle. So if they get home, they get rested up, and they bring in this Jets team that has got a lot of power to them, I think that would be huge for them if they can come back with a win. And I think that changes their scheming. I think it changes how they're feeling. And I think that would be the note that they would ideally want to end off on. And they've been gone for about 12 days. So if they come back with a win, they'll have to feel great about themselves.
And one programming note, of course, you can hear the Predators game live on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, puck drop at 9, pregame at 8. It is a nationally televised game. It is on TNT. If I am not mistaken, it is the Predators' only appearance on TNT this season. So no FanDuel Sports Network for this game. It is on national television on TNT. And you brought up Jonathan Marchessault. I've got plenty of thoughts on Mr. Marchessault, and we're going to do that in the next segment. But the Predators get a win on Sunday, a 5-3 win against the Vancouver Canucks. Steven Stamkos, two power play goals. We saw Zachary Leroux score his first career NHL goal. Congratulations to him. But one thing I have noticed in recent games, Nick, is that fourth line of Leroux, Cole Smith, and Michael McCarron, I think they've played pretty well. They've outscored opponents since being together. They've outscored opponents 5-4 at 5-on-5. When you consider just how uneven the play was when the fourth line was on the ice at the beginning of the season, it was rough to see. And it culminated with Michael McCarron being benched after a giveaway led directly to a Leon Draisaitl goal on Halloween. But since Zachary Leroux joined the team, he joined up with Cole Smith and Michael McCarron, I'm starting to see that fourth line play a lot better. And although the fourth line is certainly not as sexy as talking about Steven Stamkos or Roman Josi or Philip Forsberg, we do know that the fourth line, the identity line, is key to this team's success. So what have you seen from that fourth line, specifically how Zachary Leroux seems to have helped them get everything together?
Yeah, that's a great point. And just one thing that really pops out to me is that line has produced 6 even strength points. And across from those three guys and Roman Josi, because Josi has 3 points of his own during even strength play, no one else has more than 2 points during this road trip. So they have done exactly what's been asked of them. Both of them, or all three of them, have a goal and an assist. But I think what the Predators were missing was a guy similar to Kiefer Sherwood. And the Predators just saw him in Vancouver, obviously. And I think Leroux brings his own twist to the game. I don't think he has talked as much or chirped people, as they like to say, as often as maybe Kiefer Sherwood did last year. But I think that Zach brings that missing element that the Predators didn't have. You know, he may not, you know, hit everything in sight like Kiefer does, but I think ultimately what this line is doing is that they've kind of recaptured this identity that Andrew Burnett kind of talks about. And while it's not been perfect over a four-game stretch, they have certainly kind of recaptured what they ought to be known more as. That's gritty, tenacious, and quite frankly, they've been relentless on the puck. And those are three things that Burnett talks about quite a bit. And so I think for Zach more specifically, the guy is hungry. I mean, I thought he'd score his first NHL goal a lot sooner than he did, to be honest with you, Adam. I think he's gotten close a few other times, but I mean, his goal was a dunk. It was a slam dunk. I mean, it was wide open net, great opportunity, great juicy rebound for him to beat Kevin Lankin in. But I think for him, I think it's going to be, how can he continue to improve his 120-foot, you know, game? Because he is a minus three on this trip. He's been caught, you know, out on the ice for some goals against. So how can he kind of, you know, be quicker? How can he look for his teammates a little bit better? I mean, Cole Smith and Michael McCarron, they've been great. And quite frankly, for McCarron to come back in after being benched, Adam, and answer for his big gaffes so far, I think that's been a huge statement of him. I mean, he's a guy that doesn't really let up on himself either most of the time. And it's good to see the fourth line slowly start to pick up that pace. And not only can it be the fourth line moving forward, but how can those second, third, and first lines do moving forward as well? How can they kind of mimic what's going on there as well? So I've been very happy with the fourth line. They've been on top of teams as they should be. They're quick, like I said, tenacious. They're everywhere. So as long as they can keep doing that, and as long as the other guys can kind of, you know, pick up the rest of the slack and, you know, pull the rope like Andrew Burnett says too, I think that would be huge for them.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Nick referenced a particular Predators player earlier in this segment. I've got some thoughts on that particular Predators player, and I think it's going to lead to a larger discussion about Andrew Burnett. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan joined by Nick Kieser this week. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined by Nick Kieser this week. Keeping you entertained until a late puck drop tonight. Predators at Kraken, puck drop at 9, pregame at 8, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I will repeat, this is a nationally televised game on TNT tonight. So don't turn to FanDuel Sports Network because the Predators won't be there. They'll be on TNT for the entire nation to watch. Now, Nick, in the first segment, you brought up Jonathan Marchessault. And although most of the attention on the first day of free agency was on the Predators signing Steven Stamkos, signing Jonathan Marchessault to a 5-year contract was also a pretty big deal when you consider that he was the face of the Golden Knights franchise, an original misfit, as they referred to themselves as, a Conn Smythe Trophy winner just 2 seasons ago as playoff MVP when the Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup. Coming off of his first career 40-goal season. A lot to like about Jonathan Marchessault as a player. Great story, proven player, proven winner. But man, has he been bad as a member of the Nashville Predators. He has 0 points at 5-on-5 as a member of the Nashville Predators. Let me repeat that. 0 points at 5-on-5. He is the only member of the team without a point at 5-on-5 this season. Dante Favreau also did not have a point at 5-on-5, but of course he is no longer a member of the team. He is a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Predators have been outscored 7-1 at 5-on-5 with Jonathan Marchessault on the ice. He was on the ice for Roman Josi's goal at Vancouver on Sunday. That was the first time he was on the ice for a Predators goal at 5-on-5 this season. The Predators have been decidedly outchanced when he has been on the ice at 5-on-5. His expected goal numbers at 5-on-5 are not good. And he had turnovers that led directly to goals against in each of the games in Alberta. He had a turnover near the bench that led to Connor McDavid's goal, his 1,000th NHL point. And he might as well have gotten an assist on Blake Coleman's empty net goal against the Flames the next night. He passed it right to Coleman in the neutral zone, who iced the game with an empty netter. This is all to say that Jonathan Marchessault, so far this season, has been bad. I do not believe that Marchessault is a bad player. He has proven himself to be a good player in this league for more than a decade. But I have been so unimpressed with his performance so far as a member of the Nashville Predators. I just read you all of the stats. Nick, you watch these games incredibly closely. What is going on with this guy this season?
I think it's a great question to ask. And, you know, it's weird to think you lay all that out perfectly. And I completely agree with all of that. It's weird to think in 19 games, he has 10 points and none have been during even strength, which is really wild to me. Well, not all of his points are, you know, that way, but mostly on the power play. Honestly, it's troubling to see, but he's also a minus 11. I'd be curious to know through 20 games if he's ever had a worse plus minus. That'd be something that maybe you look up later, but he's a few points away from 500. We all know that he's a much better player than this. And I think a lot of it comes down to systems. I think a lot of it comes down for him understanding, you know, where he needs to be, how to grasp it as much as possible. And, you know, I heard Barry Trotz talk about this with Jared Stillman yesterday about how, you know, Andrew Brunette has taken time to, you know, meet with these guys one-on-one. And so I would really like to know how much that has worked for Brunette to kind of get just a good grasp of how these guys are doing and how they're feeling as people, but also within his hockey team. And I think for Jonathan's sake, Adam, I think it comes down a lot to anticipation, I think, for Jonathan. And not to say that he's done that horribly by any means, but I think for him, as far as putting the puck in the back of the net, I didn't expect him to have three goals so far. And especially with, I mean, the chances that he's had, I mean, he's created some great looks. I think he's been able to come down the ice with a lot of good charisma with his line mates, but him only having, I believe, one point on this trip, and it was an assist during the Vancouver Canucks game. I mean, for him to just have one point on this road trip is just sad to see. And for him being a minus in all of the other games as well, being a minus one, he's a plus one against the Vancouver Canucks. And just to see his level of play not be what it's supposed to be, I mean, that's sad to see. And his one assist came on the power play. So he's really got to find those lanes a little bit better. You know, I talked about earlier how he was able to use that time and space. And that one play, it gave me a lot more hope for what might come sooner rather than later. It's a matter of him utilizing that those lanes with Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, Steven Stamkos, and that one goal that Stamkos scored, where it was a give and go with Forsberg and Marchessault. Then Marchessault threw it beautifully across the slot over to Stamkos. And Stamkos' two power play goals did not come on a slap shot one-timer either. It was just Marchessault finding him at the right place at the right time. Stamkos unloading less than 3 seconds later to put it behind Kevin Lankinen. And if they can continue to find those pockets for Jonathan, I think he could just blow up. I mean, it's a real possibility. But 5-on-5 play, it's how can he recapture what he was doing in Vegas? And then also, you know, does he need to be moved around a couple more times? I mean, I don't think moving the lines is really going to fix anything else anymore. So it's a matter of, can he find those pockets, use them well, and then also be accurate with his passing? And the shooting is there. I'm not worried about his shooting. I mean, three goals is not horrible through 20 games. But for him, it is troublesome to see that most of it is during the power play and not 5-on-5. And the fact that he's got a minus 11 this year as well is indicative of how poor his play has been at times, Adam.
So just to be clear, there is a difference between 5-on-5 and even strength. So Jonathan Marchessault has 3 points at even strength. The one goal he has scored at even strength would have been his game-winning goal in overtime against the Columbus Blue Jackets a few weeks ago, because 3-on-3 is even strength. When you have an assist on an empty net situation, 6-on-5 is considered even strength. So he has 3 points at even strength, but 0 at 5-on-5. So this is the question I do want to ask you, Nick, as it relates to Andrew Brunette. One thing I would like to see more of from Brunette, and you are around the team nearly every day, especially when they're at home, so you see things that I don't. But I'm not sure exactly how Andrew Brunette is holding his top players accountable. Let's use the examples I brought up of the turnovers. So Marchessault had 2 turnovers, one in the game against Edmonton and one in the game against Calgary, that you could say led directly to goals against. And as far as I know, he continued to have a regular shift after those mistakes. Now, in Calgary, that was near the end of the game. But he did. There has not seemed to be any sort of, for lack of a better term, punishment for Marchessault's poor play. And we referenced this earlier. Michael McCarron makes a mistake against the Oilers on Halloween night, and he is benched for the remainder of the game. And if I'm not mistaken, he was scratched for a couple of games after that. So I see an imbalance here. And I also understand that top players have longer leashes than role players. But considering how poor the Predators have played relative to expectations this season, and especially how poor Jonathan Marchessault has played relative to expectations this year, I'm curious, how has Ange Brunette held his top players accountable in your eyes?
Well, I think the best way to look at it is, like I just talked about, perhaps he's had some one-on-one time with them during this road trip to kind of talk about where they're at in their play. Obviously, those are more private conversations that they have. But I think when I see them at practice and when I see them, you know, practice different small things like 5-on-5, or if I see them practice the power play and the penalty kill, Brunette does stop play every now and then, and he demands, you know, this play to go here or go there. And I think it's evident in the X's and O's that he wants there to be better execution at him. But I think for him, at least, it's a matter of, okay, if this guy makes this mistake and he's continuously doing it, then I'm going to have to give them a new stretch of time to kind of think about, you know, where they're at right now in their game. We saw that a lot last year with Cody Glass. You know, he got hurt twice before this time last year where he got put on injured reserve, and he really had to kind of harness his game a little bit. I remember when I talked to Cody, he told me that he felt like he got all the powers zapped out of him like the Space Jam people did. So I think, you know, it's a matter of, do these guys feel like they are themselves in this system? And I think for Brunette, he did, you know, scratch McCarron. And it's a matter of, if you did scratch anybody else right now, how much more harm than good would that do ultimately? And I think that's probably the way that he thinks. And do people agree with that? Do the fans agree with that? Probably not, because a lot of people have clamored to see scratchings or benchings of, you know, Luke Shen, McCarron, Smith, and then also Marchessault. You know, there's been different instances where fans are clamoring for, this guy stinks, we need to put him on the bench or just scratch him. And I think that can do more harm. I honestly think that, although they kind of missed their window of doing that, you know, being 20 games into a season right now, I think that might be more of a detriment than anything good at this point. And if they can't gel, if they can't find those pockets, like I talked about earlier, to find each other, and someone's scratched, it's just going to make it even harder. And I think that's something that people have to understand, is if this team is going to execute at the level that they really need to be, then you can't scratch someone just constantly. But I think if it could be for a game, I would totally be okay with that from the outside looking in. If I'm a fan and I see Jonathan Marchessault get scratched against, you know, Tampa Bay coming up later this month, and he's been playing poorly in the next 3 games, then that would make sense. But if a guy like McCarron gets scratched, people don't think about it as often just because he plays less minutes and he's also playing on the fourth line. So I think the way that Brunette has handled them, just to be accountable with them, I think he's done it the right way so far. But I think ultimately too, if some of the top guys aren't performing, then I could see it being, you know, hey, let's scratch you for a game, get your head right, watch the game from up top and see what things look like and move on from there. But he's not done it yet, and I don't think he will do it. So it's just going to be a matter of time, and we'll see if he ends up scratching anybody or not. And ultimately, I think it's more of an internal thing where they have those conversations, Adam.
And I don't think it necessarily needs to be a scratch, but I would like to see Brunette show that his top players' performances are unacceptable. I'll give you an example. Earlier this month, Jim Montgomery, who was fired by the Boston Bruins yesterday, David Pastrnak, the Bruins' star winger, had a turnover against the Seattle Kraken, coincidentally, and was benched for the entire third period. So I'm not advocating for Andrew Brunette to scratch Jonathan Marchessault, but he has a bad turnover against the Edmonton Oilers, and unless I'm missing something, was back on the ice for his next shift. I'm just saying, I would like to see. I understand that these things are happening behind the scenes. It's good that Brunette is having these conversations with his players. But I do think that sometimes it's more important to show some public accountability. So I'm going to be watching this very closely. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, where do the Predators rank in ESPN's NHL Future Power Rankings? We'll discuss that next. Nick Kieser and Adam Vingan. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan and Nick Kieser here with you on Wednesday evening. Predators pregame starts at 8 o'clock. Puck drop at 9 in Seattle at Climate Pledge Arena, where the Predators will wrap up their road trip against the Kraken. So, Nick, the other day, ESPN released its NHL Future Power Rankings, and they do this story annually. I always find it quite interesting. And according to ESPN, these rankings consider how teams are set up for success this season as well as the next three seasons. They had a panel of writers and editors rate each team in four categories: roster, with an emphasis on players 26 and under, prospects, cap situation, and contracts, and front office ownership and coaching. And then they have weighted percentages on how much those areas matter. Roster 35%, prospects 25%, cap and contracts 20%, owner, GM, and coach 20%. So the Predators come in right in the middle, number 16, with an overall score of 78.3. They received the 14th. They were finished 14th in roster, 13th in prospects, 25th in cap and contracts, and 17th in owner/GM/coach. So let's just start there. When you consider all of those things, Nick, the Predators, according to ESPN, in their future power rankings, are right in the middle of the league at 16th. They're in the top half in prospects and roster, near the bottom in cap in contracts, which is no surprise. They're an older team. They've got a lot of long-term commitments. And at the top of the bottom half, if you could say, an owner, GM, and coach. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty, but 16th, you think that's a fair evaluation?
Yeah, I think that would be okay to look at in the grand scheme of things. I think given that they've got, I would say, relatively stronger pool of prospects, that's, you know, probably a good place to put them. I think overarchingly as a team, 16 might look a little generous considering where they're at right now in the current standings, but I think overarchingly that seems fitting for them, quite frankly. And I know things could be better, but you know, being in the middle of the pack is not necessarily a bad thing to see. So them being at 16 does make some sense, Adam.
So each team underneath its grade, there are writers who discuss why the team is where it is, a cause for concern, and each team's prospect pipeline. So let's talk about the Predators' cause for concern first. Quote, was their free agent spending spree too much too fast? Even before their slow start, some form of that question shadowed the Predators. They went from being a team that gradually retooled their roster into one that forced its way into the discussion about their place in the Stanley Cup landscape. It's possible those early questions could be wiped away with success later in the season, but what won't go away is the need to win now, given the Predators have 10 players on their active roster who are older than 30. And that's something that I've brought up ever since that first day of free agency. This Predators team is old. They are counting on players in their early to mid 30s to lead this team. And they have good players in their early to mid 30s. But as we often know, it takes some of those younger players to push teams over the top. The prospect pipeline, according to ESPN, the Predators skyrocketed up prospect ranking lists when Barry Trotz stated his team would draft players with star potential and followed that up by taking Matthew Wood and Tanner Molendijk in 2023. However, the trade of Yaroslav Askarov, who was arguably the best goaltending prospect in the game, is a big loss to the pool value. Outside of Wood and Molendijk, who have solid NHL projections toward the top of the lineup, the Preds have good depth. Adding Igor Surin and Teddy Stiga to Fedor Svechkov, Zachary Leroux, and Joachim Kemmel gives the Predators more than a few darts at the board when it comes to the middle of their lineup. Losing Askarov is a calculated risk, but the Preds are well set up to score goals for quite some time. So, one thing that the Predators have struggled with, Nick, in recent years, and probably more than recent years, is finding those prospects who you look at and say, this guy can become a star. This guy can become a future face of the franchise. And maybe that's Matthew Wood. Maybe that's Tanner Molendijk. Maybe they just become, you know, key contributors. Maybe not faces of the franchise, but maybe they become important parts of this team's future. So what gives you confidence that this prospect pipeline, as ESPN writes, is well set up to score goals for quite some time?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. You know, those picks of Igor Surin, Teddy Stiga, and, you know, even a guy like Hiroki Glasic. I mean, there's a few guys that are underrated from where they kind of come from. And they do have a good offensive punch to them. And you know, Surin's playing in the KHL currently. Teddy Stiga is playing college hockey currently. Matthew Wood's playing college hockey. Tanner Molendijk is tearing things back up over in the WHL. And a few other guys as well. They've had more chances to play junior or wherever it may be. I think it's been a positive outlook the last two draft classes of what these guys have been able to accomplish as they join the Nashville Predators organization. And I think that's exactly right. They added a lot of guys that are capable of scoring. And, you know, Kalen Lind may not be your typical scorer, but I think that he could be more of like a third, fourth line guy that can come in and just add some skill to your organization. But I think on defense, you know, all the eyes are on Tanner Molendijk and what he's able to do as well. And so I think it's definitely reassuring to know that the Predators are still drafting well on defense. I mean, look, they even have, you know, I think it's interesting to see, like, they've relied on Mark Delgado to come up and play, you know, and to kind of bring someone up like that played significant minutes in the AHL, and now he's comfortably fitting in the NHL. I mean, that's a guy that was taken in the fourth round, and they've consistently drafted guys later in the draft where they're having some success. You know, Adam Willsby's not played an NHL game yet. He could make his debut at some point if he does hang around long enough. I mean, he was also a fourth round guy. So, Adam, the Predators have done well drafting. I think there are still some question marks. Drafting takes some time to see the fruits of that labor. But yeah, they've certainly looked positively at what they've got. And, you know, I'm a big fan of this guy on defense, Viggo Gustafsson. I liked him a lot throughout the summer. He's a bigger framed guy, needs to fill out some, but I think he's someone to pay closer attention to as things kind of go on here. But yeah, we'll see what this prospect pool looks like in a couple of years, who's around and then who's not. So It definitely does make sense for where they rank the Predators, and they do have some scoring punch, and I think it's only a matter of time before we see Fedor Svechkov as well.
So the Predators are well set up to add to that prospect pipeline if they'd like. They have three first-round picks in next year's draft. They have their own. They have Tampa Bay's after they traded Tanner Jeannot at the 2023 NHL trade deadline. And this is a reminder that on his way out the door, David Poile did some impressive work. I mean, considering that Tanner Jeannot is no longer a member of the Tampa Bay Lightning, he is now a member of the LA Kings. To get a first-round pick and more out of Tanner Jeannot, in hindsight, was a masterstroke by David Poile. And they also have the Vegas Golden Knights' first-round pick as part of the trade for Yaroslav Askarov to the Sharks. So that is three first-round picks that the Predators have. Now, if I had to guess, Nick, I would say that one of those first-round picks is going to be used in a trade sometime this season to bolster the Predators' current roster. But even so, that still leaves them with two first-round picks in the upcoming draft next summer, where they can perhaps make up some ground in these future power rankings.
No, absolutely. And I think one of those picks could be used on a centerman, perhaps. I mean, that's what the market may demand for the Predators to go get a second line center that's really solid. You know, I know you floated out over a few weeks ago, hey, Mikhail Granlund, come on over. Probably not for a first, but if they got desperate, maybe, but that'd be the wrong price to pay. But I think the Predators having three first-round picks, and by the way, they've never had three first-round picks, and they've never drafted or utilized three first-round picks. So maybe they just want to, you know, hold their cards to their chests as closely as possible right now. I mean, I was about to say David Poile, but, you know, Barry Trotz told Jared yesterday that he doesn't really want to utilize those draft picks currently. And at the end of the day, I think if he has to use them, he will, but I don't think he's wanting to do that right now. I think it's more likely than not that he would use one of those in a trade later in the season, you know, probably after New Year's for sure, is when we could possibly see him go, hey, we've really got to make this trade happen. And maybe, you know, hey, the Bruins just fired their coach, you know, is one of their centermen on the market, you know, could they want to shake some things up as well. Charlie Coyle is a name that comes to mind, and maybe that's someone Andrew Brunette likes, you know, given his history in Minnesota. But I don't know. I think it's interesting to see what they have long-term wise. Adam, the draft picks are great. I mean, they have five picks in the first two rounds this coming summer as of right now. So that could certainly change, but the Predators are stockpiled well. And like you said, Tanner Jeannot drawing in that many draft picks is just utterly insane to me. Not a single player has ever done that before in a trade for the Preds. So we'll see what they end up doing. I mean, they may rely on Fedor Svechkov to come up. I don't know if you want to do that right out of the gates, but he could certainly be a guy that helps you out for sure. And, you know, Svechkov could be, you know, your future second line centerman, maybe your first, depending on how well he does when Ryan O'Reilly leaves. Because that day will come at some point. The Predators do have what they've got stockpiled behind them, and I think they feel pretty good about it.
So we'll see what happens as the Predators look toward the future. Their immediate future, of course, is a game against the Seattle Kraken coming up at 9 o'clock, pregame at 8, right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. But coming up next, it's almost Thanksgiving. Who doesn't love Thanksgiving? I love Thanksgiving. Nick loves Thanksgiving. Jake loves Thanksgiving. We all love Thanksgiving, but Thanksgiving is an important mark on the NHL calendar, and we'll explain why next. Nick Kieser, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Adam Vingan and Nick Kieser taking you up to, well, we're not going to take you up. We are part of what is taking you up to Predators pregame, which starts at 8 o'clock tonight. Puck drop, Predators at Kraken, scheduled for 9 right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. So it's almost Thanksgiving. It's a week from tomorrow. One of my favorite holidays. I have a big problem when people put up Christmas decorations right after Halloween because I think it's Thanksgiving erasure. I think Thanksgiving should get its flowers, you know? But Thanksgiving is an important part of the NHL calendar because oftentimes teams that are not in a playoff position come American Thanksgiving, usually they don't claw back into the playoff race. So the Predators, as we sit here on Wednesday evening, are 6 points back of the Vancouver Canucks for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. The Predators have played one more game than the Canucks. Over the past four full NHL seasons, so I'm not including the 2019-20 season, which was impacted by the pandemic, or the 2020-2021 season, which was also impacted by the pandemic. That season started after Thanksgiving. So I'm not including those two seasons. I'm starting at 2018-19 and then the past three full 82-game seasons. 15 teams out of 63 total who were out of a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving made the playoffs. 15 of 63. That is roughly a quarter. It's under a quarter. It's 23.8%. So 15 of 63 teams that were not in the playoffs on American Thanksgiving reached the playoffs over the past four full NHL seasons. Now, there are some notable teams among those 15 that were not in a playoff spot on Thanksgiving. The 2018-19 St. Louis Blues, who won the Stanley Cup, were not in a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving in 2018. The 2022-2023 Florida Panthers, who went to the Stanley Cup final, they were not in a playoff spot on Thanksgiving in 2022. The 2023-2024 Edmonton Oilers, who also went to the Stanley Cup final and lost to the Panthers, were not in a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving in 2023. So some notable teams that were not in the playoff spot on the holiday not only made the playoffs, but went far in the playoffs. I acknowledge that. The Predators have actually done it twice over that four-season span. In 2021-2022, the Predators were tied with the Avalanche, who were the eighth team at the time, with 21 points in the standings, but the Predators had played three more games, so the Avalanche had the advantage there. And last season, the Predators were 5 points back of the Kraken, who were in eighth place at the time, and the Predators had played three fewer games. They had three games in hand. So it is not impossible for teams that are not in the playoffs on Thanksgiving to make the playoffs. But over the past 4 years, under a quarter of teams that were not made the playoffs. So that is why it is important that the Predators make up as much ground as they can over the next four games. They have four games left before Thanksgiving. Tonight at Seattle, home to Winnipeg on Saturday, at New Jersey on Monday, and home to Philadelphia next Wednesday. So four games before Thanksgiving. Nick, what do you need to see out of the Predators in these next four games to put themselves into a position that maybe they're not in a playoff spot on Thanksgiving, but they're knocking on the door?
Well, I think the first and foremost thing, we've got to see some guys step up. And, you know, we talked about some guys that they added from free agency, but I think just in terms of some guys that have been around, I think, you know, Ryan O'Reilly's got to step it up. I think Colton Sissons has been kind of lackluster so far this year too. And I know that he just came back from injury, but I really feel like Tommy Novak could make a difference as well. Defensively speaking, I mean, look, Roman Josi's done pretty well. I wouldn't think that he's been, you know, playing poor, but I do think that there are some guys on defense that could make a big difference. And, you know, ultimately, Adam, I think, you know, those guys that I just listed, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, I felt like he's not won as many puck battles. I feel like he's not been able to be as consistent as he was previously. You know, Colton Sissons too is a weird guy to mention, but the reason I do is because he's always one of the glue guys on the roster. And I really feel like that at times he's one of the best players up and down the ice as a two-way forward. And, you know, he had 15 goals last year, and I think that he's missing that touch that he had last year just a little bit. But, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how many guys could step up over the next few games and, you know, who else can really stand out. And, you know, UC Saros has been awesome on the PK, but how more, you know, how much more disciplined can this group be? They've taken some dumb penalties and they've not been playing as smart at times. So how can they take care of the puck, but also stay out of the box as well? Over the next few games, you know, we've already mentioned they've got Seattle tonight. They got Winnipeg coming up, and then, you know, they play a red hot New Jersey team as well. That's not going to be any easier than Winnipeg is. And then the next two games at home are huge, but before Thanksgiving, they got John Tortorella and the Flyers. So, you know, it's going to be huge to see if they can win these games and if they can get on a little bit like not, you know, if they win, you know, I'm not looking for like a four game winning streak by any means, but if they can get, you know, three wins over this next little bit, I can feel a lot more better.
So the Predators are looking to win consecutive games for just the second time this season. After starting 0-5, they won three consecutive games against the Bruins, Blackhawks, and Blue Jackets. We've seen this a couple of times now where we thought that the Predators would take a win and use it as a launching pad. We thought about that when they beat the Avalanche 5-2 at home. Then they lose 3-0 to the Kings. We thought about it when they beat the Utah Hockey Club 4-0 at home before this road trip. Then they lost 3 in a row. So it is important for them to string wins together. Points are good, which they've been getting, but they do need to win games. So that is why this game against Seattle is very important. Nick, thank you so much for joining me. I know that you're a bit under the weather, but your analysis was still top-notch, my friend. Thanks for joining me this week.
Absolutely. I'll be seeing you guys soon, and appreciate the time as always to hang out with you, Adam, and talk some hockey.
Always a pleasure. For Nick Kieser and Jake Lyman, I am Adam Bingen. Enjoy the game tonight. Predators at Kraken, puck drop at 9, pregame at 8, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.